Thanks, Rita. Today I want to present FLIP ETOR, as Rita mentioned. FLIP, which stands for the Public Health Laboratory Interoperability Project. Can everybody hear me, by the way? Is that better? Is that better?
There's a volume thing here.
There we go.
That.
Excellent. FLIP's high-level goals is to get the top talent back to doing what they do best. For instance, instead of filling out forms and phoning and faxing documents and performing data entry, it aims to get the lab folks back to doing what they do best, and that's back at the bench, performing tests and producing results. Another goal of FLIP is connecting public health laboratories. The connection obviously is important, but in addition to the connection, they need to be speaking the same language. And to that end, FLIP is aiming to make sure that all public health laboratories are in fact speaking the same language. And today, just as you can take your ATM card to any ATM machine in the country and have it work, FLIP is aiming for that same level of broad integration and compatibility among public health laboratories. This diagram shows the scope of FLIP. The purple, kind of bluish purple circle is the first broad phase. The white circle is the second phase. That represents where ultimately FLIP plans to expand to include all the partners of the state public health laboratory. There are six use cases under FLIP today. Some of them are depicted on this diagram. The first one, represented by the red arrows, is the electronic laboratory surveillance message. This pertains to influenza results sent by the state public health lab to the CDC Epi Division. Currently there's four states in production. There's four states in test, and there are 13 states in the queue. The second use case, represented by the light blue arrows, represents the electronic test order and result message for service request. This one pertains to orders sent to the state public health lab by clinical or commercial partners. The third use case, represented by the dark blue bidirectional arrows between the states, is the electronic test order and result message for surge. This one pertains to specimens sent by one state public health laboratory to another state public health laboratory. There's currently two projects, one between Nebraska, Iowa, and Minnesota, and another between Florida and Texas. The fourth use case, not depicted on this diagram, relates to building the infrastructure for the other use cases via route not read hubs. Currently there's two route not read hubs, one in Nebraska and one in Florida. There's seven state public health labs connected and two in production. The fifth use case, also not depicted on the diagram, has to deal with outreach or collaboration. Reaching out to other organizations and harmonizing FLIP's efforts with other national efforts. For instance, ELR, EHR, LIMSI, NHSN, CSTE, PHII, FIN, community practices, and so forth. FLIP does not operate in a vacuum. And the final use case, the sixth use case, represented by the dark blue bidirectional arrows between the state and CCID, is the electronic test order message, the electronic test order and result message for reference. This one pertains to specimens sent by the state public health lab to the laboratories at CCID. There are currently three states and CCID in development right now, and this is actually the use case that we're talking about today. On this map, the colored states represent the current FLIP participants. So, and each state is participating in one or more FLIP use cases. They each bring their own level of expertise and experience to the table, thus helping to build the FLIP community. But two things that they each bring are a willingness to succeed and a desire to participate. This next map shows states that are currently working towards sending influenza results to the CDC. And what we're talking about today is the expansion of this unidirectional or one-way data exchange to a bidirectional or two-way data exchange. And now that we've taken a look at what FLIP is, we'll move over into looking at what eTOR is about. eTOR, as we heard when we looked at the use cases, is the electronic test order and result. The goal is to establish full electronic data sharing between the state public health labs and their partners. And those partners can be at the national, state, and local level, and can be in the public and private sectors. The data sharing in this case pertains specifically to electronic orders and those orders linked electronic results. At its core, eTOR is about getting a specimen tested by a partner laboratory. And while ELR and case reporting are obviously important aspects of public health messaging, they're not what eTOR is about. The current data sharing process, and this is an as-is process, and I'm not going to go through each of the boxes, but the current data sharing process is entirely paper-based. As I'm sure many are aware, the paper-based dash form, along with the specimen, is submitted to the CDC for testing. Likewise, when the result's ready, a paper report is sent back to the state public health lab. In between the submission and the report, there's a number of processes that serve to slow things down and really present possible errors. Some of those, for example, the state public health lab having to handle the data twice. They have to enter it in their LIMS and then again on the dash form. Then the stat lab having to take that dash form and then perform data entry and enter it again. And then the CCID lab having to take that information and then they have to check it, make sure everything's valid. Then once it's all done, CCID lab has to print off the report and mail that back out. And then finally, the state public health lab, once they get that, then they have to take that report and enter it, perform data entry and to get it back into their LIMS or their system. The process under FLIP is really almost entirely electronic based. Again, I'm not going to go through all of the diagrams, but some of the main things are when an order or request is required, an electronic order message is used to submit the request. A modified minimalist e-dash, well, we call it the e-dash form, which is essentially just a shipping manifest, accompanies a specimen. And then when a result is ready, an electronic result message is returned back to the submitter, back to the state public health lab. So really, all the manual processes are done away with, and a lot of benefits are realized in terms of getting rid of the slowdowns and the potential for errors. Some of those, going back to what I just mentioned, the state public health lab doesn't have to re-enter the data onto the dash form. Stat lab doesn't have to re-enter the information into their system. CCID lab, stat lab can accelerate the release of the orders. CCID lab can accelerate the availability of the results. And the CCID lab doesn't have to print or mail anything back to the state public health lab, and which subsequently means the state public health lab doesn't have to re-enter all that information back into their system manually. So a number of benefits are realized in terms of cost and just the confidence in the system, the timeliness in which everything really flows through. Now that we've seen what eTOR is about, we'll move on into how it's going to be realized. First and foremost is obtaining the buy-in from all of our partners. That includes the CCID labs, the state public health labs, NICFI, APHL leadership, and the CDC leadership. And not only is obtaining the buy-in at that level important, but obtaining the buy-in within each of the partners is important at the subject matter expert level. For instance, the laboratory experts, the data exchange experts, and the standards experts. So really getting that buy-in at the right level from all the right partners it's critical to any project, and Flip eTour is no different in that respect. Don't be late for our conference calls, or we'll talk about you. eTour will be realized by utilizing a collaborative approach, really by getting the right participants in at the management level, the technological level, and the business level. We're better able to avoid problems and tailor the solution to meet our goals. And not only is the collaboration internal, but it reaches out and is external to the project. This helps give us a better perspective and can highlight different areas. For instance, some of the things we can help with is consistently applying standards, helping to create consistent readable documentation, and helping to ensure that you are in fact following the industry standards. eTour will also be realized by limiting its scope. For instance, in this particular phase, the scope's limited. The agents are limited to Salmonella and Bacillus anthracis. The specimen types are limited to isolates from human specimens. However, that doesn't mean that we just put a blinder on and forget about those things. For each item that we're limiting, we have a parking lot item, which is essentially just a list of those running pieces. Some example for the specimen types, we have human clinical specimens, animal specimens, environmental, food, and so forth. So each of those will most likely require some change to the profile, and we want to make sure that everybody's aware that at some point in the future, changes will most likely be required because of them. We'll also implement in an iterative fashion. Knowing that we have to deliver iteratively really kind of helps us from keeping to overanalyze things and rehash things, and ultimately not delivering anything. And essentially what you're left with is analysis paralysis. At the outset, everybody's in the mindset that delivery is key. Delivering a limited scope production product is that works and that can be built upon is really more important than building a full scope product that doesn't work. I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer. This last quote, modified by Voltaire, "Don't allow the pursuit of perfection to be the enemy of the very good," sums up this last point well. Now we're going to take a look at some of the components of eTour. These represent some of the lower level kind of nuts and bolts type things, and I won't have time to go into these in great detail just given the time constraints, but I wanted to make sure that you're aware of some of the artifacts and work products that are present. This first one, the harmonized set of data elements. What we did here is we took a look at the paper requisition, the LIMS, and the paper report, and came up with a harmonized set of data elements for the messages. What this did, it really gave us a chance to pull together all those pieces that we needed for both the electronic order and electronic result. Make sure that we weren't missing anything. And it also helped highlight areas where the LIMS might need to be modified. Next is a harmonized test catalog. Knowing what's on the menu is just as important as knowing what each menu item is comprised of. It's for that reason the test catalog is created. The process of creating the test catalog consists of applying standard codes to each of the elements and defining what each of the possible result values might be. The filler is the one that maintains the test catalog, and it gives the placer the information it needs to both place the order and then process the result. One of the main components of eTour is the implementation profile. This takes form of a message guide. The message guide has the necessary artifacts in it to implement the selected messages. Some of the things that are included in there, use cases, dynamic interaction models, interactions, the segment definitions, value sets, data type definitions, sample messages, and so forth. And we'll actually take a look at a few of these just to give you an idea of what they look like and the level of detail that's present. This is a dynamic interaction model. The dynamic interaction model provides you with details related to the interactions between the placer and the filler and then the resulting message flows. This particular one that I'm showing here shows the initial stages of the interactions between the placer and the filler for an order, for a new order. I had mentioned trigger events in the last slide. Here they're shown in table form with a few more details. What each row shows is an individual interaction between the placer and the filler. The events initiator is documented along with the message type and the message field values associated with the event. Some of the examples on here, new order, specimen received, preliminary, corrected, final results, and so forth. This is an example of a message definition. The message definition gives the implementers a list of the segments and the segment groups that are included in the particular message. Each segment's usage, and cardinality are included. This is an example of some of the data types used. What the data types do is they give the implementer information related to each of the fields and how those fields are created in the message. Next is an example of a segment definition. A segment definition provides the implementer with a list of the fields that are present in the segment. Again, the usage and cardinality are included, along with a column for a value set, which provides for one or more value sets to be associated with a particular field. This is an example of a value set, an HL7 table, happens to be bound OBX11. What this does is gives the implementers a list of the specific values that can appear or be associated with whatever individual field that it's bound to. And here's an example of a sample message, just a portion kind of zoomed in on just so you can see it. The rest of it's pretty hard to see. But what these can be used for, these can be used by the implementer when they're crafting their messages. A lot of times it's easier to look at a concrete example when you're implementing something along with the profiles, other artifacts. Just as I say, a picture's worth a thousand words, and this really gives the implementers a good idea of what exactly goes where and a concrete example of that. The last artifact from the guide isn't really technical in nature, but it's still important and has to do with the physical shipment of specimens from the placer to the filler. This is an example of the E-dash that I had mentioned. It really doesn't have a lot of information required on it. I don't know if you're familiar with the current dash form. This is it on the E-dash. It's just one page, but a couple pieces of information. For example, the order ID, the specimen ID, are required to match up the physical specimen when it arrives at the filler. You need something to pull those together with the electronic message. Now that we've looked at what's included in the implementation profile, take a quick look at something that's not included, and that's optionality. Optionality is not allowed. The elements in a message profile can have various usages assigned to them. For example, if I want to put required as a usage, that simply means that element is required to be supported. Another example is optional, and actually what that means is that its usage has not been defined. So the ramifications of that in terms of implementation are pretty big. Implementation is not possible without further constraint or specification. So that flip eTOR wanted to avoid the situation where each of the states was negotiating with their partners and creating their own profiles, and we have a proliferation of profiles. I just did not want to get into that. So for that reason, optionality is not allowed, optional is not allowed. Full harmonization and implementation specification is required in order to realize our goal. Finally, future editions of the guide. We plan to have translations to other HL7 versions. Currently it's at 2.6. In order to integrate with some of our other partners, we plan to have documentation related to translating to other HL7 versions. For example, 2.6 to 2.4, 2.3.1, whatever the case may be. We're also looking at automated translation services where the laboratory wouldn't have to worry about the translation locally. They could be handled by a service in the cloud, for instance. I'd like to thank the contributing authors from the Florida, Iowa, Virginia State Public Health Labs, as well as APHL and NICFI, and a special thanks to Ricky Merrick and John Carroll for their help in the slides. So with that, take any questions.
Thanks. I'm sure there's going to be questions. Ted, imagine that.
So one of the big differences here between the portion of eTOR that is the results report and the ELR message is you've got all the specimen information, which is explicitly excluded from the ELR message or put in some kind of hacked way because
we don't have a specimen
SPM
segment.
Right. Kind of stuff. Okay, so it's a full OUL because that's too small for me to read. And you've gone ahead and done the conformance specification of required or empty and gotten rid of optionality. You get a gold star.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
That was a comment. Was there a question embedded in there?
Well, it was about the OUL.
I'll take the gold star. Yeah. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah,
no, never mind. Just leave it at that. No.
Okay. Other questions?
Where'd you come up with the guide of lab tests? You had lab tests coded, and where would you come up with that information to support the test guide? Maybe you called it something.
Oh, yeah, the test catalog? Yep.
Test catalog.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What's the origin of that information?
That was all just out of thin air. I mean, we really had to take that and take all of the tests that were offered by the filler apply standard codes to them. Oh yeah, if there were loinks available, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the other ones look like they're roll up codes.
Yeah.
Ricky.
Yeah,
Ricky. Stan.
So the order code is not in loink. So the order code you saw is what we call a flip code that combines the required codes that have to be reported back to you when you order this. Every single time, and then it also includes some optional codes, which are all the biochemical results, which CCID will report back. And for all the required tests, those are all loinked. They all have loink codes. The optional codes at this point in time, I haven't gotten them all into loink. So for now, so that we can move forward with the moving into testing and production, they have flip codes. They are going to be put into loink. Process of submitting them all.
Okay. So we're not coming up with a new standard called flip.
No.
On the order side, we might end up with that, just because. If I can get the order code into loink as well, I will go for that. But if I can't get it in there, then it'll be a flip code. But that is a specific order code for just that test at that lab. So.
Sometimes you can't get certain codes into standards bonds. Mm-hmm. South Seminole Hospital in Florida, among many thousands of hospitals, has in their formulary magic mouthwash. And anybody who's a nurse knows what magic mouthwash is. Right? There's no NDC code for magic mouthwash. But it's in people's formulary, and you have to support it. Right? And the same kind of thing happens with anything like that. There are things that are groups of codes, or things that
don't
fit the terminology. Okay.
So it's not like
you're doing the research and say we need to. Yeah.
codes are being requested. I mean, Ricky is a magician, and she has, you know, great contacts with Moink and can get things added. I think, tell me if I'm wrong, a little bird told me that Moink had agreed to add the order codes. Is that true?
Yes, they're working on it.
They're working on it.
They'll probably put all of them in.
Yeah.
Yeah, most likely they will.
Maybe one or two outliers will have to be part of the roller hierarchy, because it'll be like a panel code.
And that is definitely a panel code right there.
Okay. Well, almost all panel codes.
Mm-hmm.
In the back?
Could you guys talk about change control and change control within the process?
Repeat the question.
How changes happen?
Can we talk about change control?
Yeah.
And how you guys make changes to the profile and to the code and what have you?
Well, right now we've got... Are you talking about the versioning? Yeah, so right now we have it split up. There's actually two versions associated with the document or the profile. One would be if the profile changes, the version is that version would be revved for that. So you could potentially have a 1.2.3 for the document version and a 3.4.5 for the profile version. So if there's things that aren't really, I don't want to say not germane, but they're not, they don't impact the profile, you know, maybe they don't impact the vocabulary, they don't impact the message structure, clarification, then that type of thing is handled by revving the document.
Was that the heart of your question, or were you going somewhere else with your question?
I was asking more about, there is a process in place that allows changes to happen. So when, as a couple of earlier questions that came up, it does allow for new code or new loan code to be asked for, and it does allow the entire process to change from flip code to loan code.
Mm-hmm.
People to implement the new changes before it goes in effect, which is significantly, well, I don't know if it's significantly different, but that's built into the process and built into the system so we can grow over time and overcome some of the shortcomings that we might have right now.
Since you're providing an answer as well as a question, would you like to stand up and introduce yourself?
He's right here. This is him.
Sorry. My name is Darius Shirazi.
Just so people know you if they need to ask questions. Any other questions? Right there.
The shipping information? Mm-hmm. We don't have that electronically. Yeah, so that's what the e-dash is used for, yep. So that's essentially the shipping manifest that accompanies the physical specimen. Because, so what's gonna happen is you'll submit an electronic order, and that'll have an order ID on it, specimen ID, so forth. And then you'll go over and you'll, you know, go to your shipping department with the e-dash in hand. E-dash will have order ID, specimen ID, and just, you know, who it's coming from. That'll be stuck in with the specimen. Well, the electronic order is down there instantaneously. So they're just, you know, sitting waiting in queue. When the specimen arrives at the stat lab, then they're able to take that out and look at those just couple pieces of information and say, oh, yep, we've got an order sitting here in queue. We can match them up. And
thanks for the lovely presentation. I'm impressed that the commercial labs have worked this out where if you order a test that's going to go to a reference lab, say Mayo Clinic, you put it in your local lab information system and they're interfaced with Mayo Clinic. And so all the processes we describe here, say if we were referring from public health lab to CDC lab, all those processes have been worked out where the information is put into the local lab and flows electronically to the reference lab, and the test result flows back from the reference lab back to the original lab that placed the order. was there enough precedence and groundwork laid there that we're able to benefit from that as we develop the same processes for getting our public health labs to talk to each other? Or did they not do it on a it seems like we're really, you know, starting from the ground up and doing this in a very fundamental way. I'm just kind of curious whether there was anything there we could have built on, or maybe you did build on.
Yeah, I wouldn't say so, unfortunately. I mean, yeah, to be you know, quite blunt, yeah, there, you know, it really was a ground up type situation. One would have thought that some of that would have carried over. Now, obviously, you know, some of the experience and whatnot, I mean, that is brought over, because a lot of the same processes do have to occur. Ricky?
We did look at the IHE specifications, but they're at 2.5, and some of the fields that are now available in 2.6, we did want to incorporate. And also the IHE profiles have a lot of optionality still in them, so a lot of the work that we had to do anyway to constrain it down and get rid of all the optionality. So yes, we did look at the IHE profiles when we very first started out and realized that we do have to, you know, do a lot of modifications on those.
We can take one more question. Austin, you want to come up while we're doing that? Anybody, one more question? Did I see a hand? Okay, well, one more time. Okay. Other questions? If not, thank you, Kurt.
Okay, thank you.